Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix. Words appear. For AP, who gave me an old house. Darkness.
I have heard myself say that a house with a death in it can never again be bought or sold by the living. It can only be borrowed from the ghosts that have stayed behind.
In profile, the vaporous figure of a woman wearing a high-necked, floor-length dress moves backward into the inky dark.
To go back and forth, letting out and gathering back in again. Worrying over the floors in confused circles. Tending to their deaths like patchy, withered gardens. They have stayed to look back for a glimpse of the very last moments of their lives. But the memories of their own deaths are faces on the wrong side of wet windows, smeared by rain. Impossible to properly see.
She stops and her face begins to take form.
There is nothing that chains them to the places where their bodies have fallen. They are free to go. But still they confine themselves. Held in place by their looking. For those who have stayed, their prison is their never seeing.
She looks over her left shoulder, her face to the front.
And left all alone. This is how they rot.
Words appear. I am the pretty thing that lives in the house. Fades away. A dim circle of light illuminates the panels of a door.
I did not know it at the time, but the house that stands at the end of Teacup Road, in the town of Braintree, Massachusetts, was such a house.
The light illuminates the door's handle. It moves across the piano toward another door.
A house that holds a seat for the memory of a death.
The light continues to move. It shines over a bed. A young boy lies on top.
The staying place of a rotted ghost.
The light travels slowly across the room. It moves over sheer curtains and finds a girl sleeping in another bed. The girl turns over. The light moves across the wall and shines on a globe. A dirt road cuts through a forested area. A rustic sign with the name Blum stands at its entrance.
At the time of my arrival, in the first part of August, the house was occupied by Iris Blum, the author of 13 novels, the kinds of thick and frightening books that people buy at airports and supermarkets.
A pair of brick chimneys rise from the roof of a white house. Inside, a staircase leads to the front door. A lamp sits on a small table in the sparse hall.
Of her books, I have read fewer than 9 pages of only a single one. And all the while suppressing a very bad taste.
Light shines through a kitchen window onto a table.
I'm not even sure of the title. From where I am now, I can be sure of only a very few things.
The front door opens. A balding man wearing glasses enters. A young woman follows. She wears a button-up shirt and cardigan, her hair in a bun. He closes the door. The woman scans the tidy interior of the house. Arched eyebrows frame her wide eyes. Light shines into the kitchen from a window over the sink. Then, the woman looks straight ahead.
The pretty thing you are looking at is me. Of this, I am sure. My name is Lily Saylor. I am a hospice nurse.
A smile crosses Lily's face.
3 days ago, I turned 28 years old.
Lily looks up and exhales.
I will never be 29 years old.
She's just above the bedroom on the right in the front of the house.
Lily looks upstairs. A painting of a simple landscape hangs on the wall. Lily turns to the older man. She hesitates and turns back. Lily glances up and walks upstairs. At the top of the stairs, she looks over her shoulder. Lily carries a bag in each hand down the hall. She stops and casts her gaze downward, her face flushed. Lily looks back up. A made bed sits in the center of an open bedroom. Lily shifts her shoulders and shakes her head slightly. She turns in the opposite direction and walks into the doorway of another open room. Inside, an elderly woman, draped in a shawl, sits in a chair. She stares out of a window. Lily approaches. She places her left hand over her right and stands behind the elderly woman. The woman continues to stare out of the window.
Hello, Miss Blum.
Miss Blum turns her head slowly. Lily smiles.
My name is Lily. I'm going to be staying with you from now on. I hope that's all right.
Miss Blum turns slowly and looks at Lily. She stares, her mouth slack. She lifts her gaze and moves her mouth. Miss Blum blinks, tears well in her eyes. Lily stares back at her. She nods. Lily closes her mouth and smiles slightly. Pale sunlight glows on the weathered exterior of the house. Thin trees stand in the distance. The cogs in a cassette tape turn. Lily holds a key in her hand. On the key ring, a tag reads, Lily. She closes her hand tightly over the key. Lily stands at the bottom of the stairs near the small table. She puts the key in her shirt pocket. Lily turns and shifts her weight. Then she looks downward. Lily tilts her head. She walks forward and opens a drawer in the front of the table. A belt lies on top of papers and loose change. She touches it, then slaps her own hand.
No snooping, you.
Lily closes the drawer. She straightens and shakes her head. Lily turns. She cocks her head. Lily takes a few steps forward. She stops, leans, and looks ahead. Lily looks up the stairs. She walks to the staircase and starts up. On the second floor, Lily reaches the top of the stairs. She looks around a corner. Then she slowly follows the banister into the dimly lit hallway. She walks, her hand running along the railing, toward the two rooms at the end of the hall. Lily looks into the empty bedroom. She turns to Miss Blum's room. Now Lily approaches Miss Blum's bed. She lies motionless under the blanket. Lily walks around to the opposite side of the bed, closest to the wall. She trails her hand on the blanket. Lily looks in Miss Blum's direction. Then she looks down. A bell and a tape player sit on a bedside table. Lily places her fingers over the buttons. The cassette cogs stop. Lily moves closer to the bed and looks down toward it. Lily stares. She slowly shifts her eyes toward Miss Blum's face. Miss Blum sleeps. Her chest gently rises and drops. Lily stares with wide eyes, then blinks. Now she stands in the entry hall, looking up at the stairs.
I am very seldom required to wear white by my employers. But anyway, I always do. It has always been that wearing white reassures the sick, that I can never be touched. Even as darkness folds in on them from every side, closing like a claw.
Nighttime. Light shines out a window. In the bathroom, Lily removes her toiletries from a bag and puts them around the sink. Free of its bun, her brown hair reaches her shoulders. Lily glances at her reflection in the mirror. Then she stares at herself. A divide in the mirror splits her reflection. Lily continues to place her toiletries on the vanity. She smiles and looks toward the old-fashioned tub that sits in front of a window. Her smile fades. Lily looks toward the ceiling and glances toward the bathroom door. Darkness shrouds the front door. The stairs are barely visible in the dim light. Lily steps out of the dark. Her silhouette appears in the doorway of the kitchen. She wears glasses and a white cardigan. Lily steps forward and looks up to the ceiling. She leans forward. Lily touches a raised spot of paint on the wall. She pulls her finger away. Lily's gaze darts up. She pulls her sweater tightly around her. Lily turns to the kitchen. She looks to her right and walks inside. She feels along the wall and hits a switch. Lights shine. Lily scans the kitchen. She reaches into her pocket and pulls out a small card. She glances at it and grabs the receiver of a rotary phone on the wall. With the receiver pressed to her shoulder, she dials. The doorway frames the light hanging over the kitchen sink. Lily shakes her wrist and puts the tip of her pinky in her mouth. Lily walks away from the base of the phone.
Wake up, Spaz. Then go to sleep. I don't know what.
She paces.
Is Bart in there with you? You slut. he awake? Tell him hi. No. Don't tell him who it is. Just...
Near a long wooden dining table, a chair hangs upside down from a pegboard.
Oh, what are you guys doing? Oh, you guys are lame. Nothing. Couldn't sleep. First night in a place always weirds me out, you know. Kitchen. The phone is in the kitchen. What do you want?
Lily wraps the phone cord around her hand.
It's got one of those ridiculously long cords that your mom used to have. Remember that? Oh, it's a real old house, so... I don't know.
She twirls slowly, wrapping and unwrapping herself in the cord.
They're thicker? Oh, the walls are thicker. Creepy. Why would you say that to me right now? In the middle of the night when I'm here all alone? I'm okay. No, he hasn't called.
Lily sits in a chair at the table.
He doesn't have this number. I can't imagine what I'd say if he did. I mean, what does a person say? Oh, remember that time we almost but then didn't get married? 'Cause I do. No, I don't think he will either. Can we not talk about Scott right now, please?
Her chest heaves.
Yeah, it'll be good to be here. Good to be away, just good to kind of put myself away from...
Lily looks off, her mouth open. She looks up. She looks down, shakes her head, closes her eyes, and covers the receiver with her hand. Dishes rest on shelves above a counter. Lily sits at the table. The white phone cord stretches back toward its base on the kitchen wall. She looks to the ceiling. The phone cord behind her levitates. The kitchen lights dim.
What are you guys doing? Oh? Well, that sounds pretty yummy right about now. Yeah, I know. I'm sure I'll end up cooking a bunch for Miss Blum. No, it's Blum Stupid, not Miss Plum. This isn't Clue. Well, maybe I'll bake a pie. I think I saw some black beer. Jesus.
The phone flies backward. Lily stands. She steps around the chair and leans forward. Lily looks toward the darkened doorway. She takes small steps forward. The phone lies on the floor. Lily kneels and crawls toward it on her hands and knees. She grabs the phone.
Hello? Hello? Oh. Oh, the phone just flew out of my hand.
Oh. Lily stands.
The cord not as long as it seems, huh? All right, dropped it like a stupid idiot. Oh, I'm gonna give myself a heart attack.
Lily stands in the kitchen doorway. She backs into the kitchen and clutches the phone cord. Lily puts the cord in her mouth.
Anywho, what's new with you?
Lily walks away from the doorway back toward the table, pulling and chewing on the cord in her mouth. In the blackened doorway, a shape begins to materialize. It is the blurry back of a brown-haired woman in white.
There. It was just there. Even then, on my very first night in the house... Death. But I cannot see it. Not yet. But I can.
can feel it shifting its weight from barefoot to barefoot, stepping around softly behind a curtain of dark, pacing back and forth in the cage of my chest.
The dimly lit entry hall of the house. At the bottom of the stairs, the corner of a rug is turned over. Lily walks into the kitchen doorway. She looks back into the kitchen. Then she turns toward the entrance. Lily steps into the hall. She takes a step away from the wall with the mold and walks toward the entry. Thick wool socks cover her feet. She kicks the rug back over. Lily walks upstairs. Outside, the gable of the house stands against the dark sky. Inside a dark room. Light illuminates the room. Lily stares. Then she walks inside. Lily nears a desk. A typewriter sits on top. Lily looks from the typewriter to her right. Her mouth opens. She walks in the direction of her gaze. Lily squints and moves forward. She swallows and tilts her head. A series of similar books fill a shelf. Lily reads the titles.
Dark Moon Flower. Underwater. Housewife.
The spines of the books lined up on the shelf. Her eyes wander to the left. Her jaw drops.
So that's where you're hiding.
An old television set with dials and rabbit ears. Lily kneels in front of the screen.
They told me there wasn't one of you.
She presses a switch. Static appears on the TV. She turns the dials, switching through stations of static. Lily reaches for the antenna. She pulls down one of the ears. Static remains on the screen. Lily presses the switch and the TV goes dark.
Well, no need to be rude.
Lily stands up. Iris stands at the doorway.
Oh, Miss Blum, you scared me. Well, let's get you back.
Here you go.
Lily helps Iris into a chair.
Now I'm thinking it's not the best idea for you to be getting up without me from now on.
Iris's lip quivers. She swallows hard.
Can we agree to that?
Polly?
My name is Lily. Miss Blum. We met a few hours ago. I'm going to be staying here with you from now on.
My Polly. Tell me you miss me. Just a little bit, too.
Lily looks at her, her face immobile.
You'll give me as much as that, won't you?
Iris leans in closer to Lily, tears in her eyes. Lily looks directly at Iris, her eyes wide and glistening. Iris slowly blinks. Lily breathes in and puts on a smile, then looks away. The dimly lit front hall.
It can't be too much longer now. Because time spent in a house with a death in it passes more quickly, you know. 11 months, passing like the night.
Sunlight illuminates the front hall of the house. Lily, her hair in a bun, straightens cups on a shelf. She arranges a vase of flowers by the kitchen sink. She leans in and smells them. She smiles. She points to each of the flowers.
Susie. Sally. Candace and Jane.
Lily looks out the window, then turns to a clock on the wall. 10 o'clock on the dot. Lily leans into the flowers and talks to them.
Scary.
Lily's eyes widen. She steps back and turns. Lily breathes and looks toward the entryway. Now she moves toward the front door and stops. She takes a deep breath, then opens the door. The balding man with glasses comes in. Lily gives him a smile as he steps inside. The man looks at Lily.
Was the drive all right?
Yes, the summer season finally done and everyone going the other way over bridges.
He grins at her, then bites his lip as he faces upstairs.
And how is the lady of the house today?
Oh, she's comfortable, taking a nap as she usually does at this time.
And the wall, you say?
Yes. It was fine when I first moved in, but now I think it's gotten much worse in the past few weeks.
They walk toward the kitchen. There is an area of dark splotches on the white wall. The man examines it. He nods to himself.
Possibly a mold of some kind. Likely there's some plumbing behind the wall, a pipe that runs up to the bathroom.
Oh, the laundry room is just above. I sometimes hear the water going up and a kind of knocking sound.
You say you haven't seen it anywhere else?
No. Only right here.
She pulls her sweater around her. Later, at the table.
Well, as to whether or not the estate will approve the cost for cosmetic repairs. That is another thing altogether.
Oh, I'm not sure I'd agree it's cosmetic.
Well, cosmetic as opposed to structural. The flesh and not the bones.
Well, I just thought that for Miss Blum's respiratory, for my respiratory, to be breathing mold.
Well, as you know, it is Ms. Blum's stated desire to remain in this house until the occasion of her death, and that all medical care be provided here on the premises, regardless of financial burden to the estate. And you've been here nearly a year already. Given her advanced age and present condition, it seems fair to assume that your arrangement would not extend beyond another year or two at maximum. Wouldn't you say?
Well, overall, I'd say her physical health is rather good. So I'm sure I couldn't say.
No, of course. That's good.
But isn't she all there is to the estate? She doesn't have any children. No family. Not a single visitor in all the time I've been here.
True, but Miss Blum has designated the property as the centerpiece for a grant foundation to be awarded after her death to a worthy woman author as a home and workspace at no cost. House of Stories, she calls it.
Well, it'll have to be fixed up then for whoever.
Well, it will be when the time comes.
He shuffles business cards.
But the The state can't pay for everything. Oh, there we are. They've been out in the past, and will give us a better idea.
He hands Lily a card.
Was there anything else?
No. Oh. Yes. Do you know anything about anyone named Polly?
Polly? Polly who?
Miss Plum insists on calling me Polly. She never calls me anything else. Of course, it's a natural thing for someone with her condition. It's just that a confusion like that is usually with the memory of someone significant, not just a no one.
Well, there is Polly from Ms. Blum's novel, The Lady in the Walls.
Oh.
Easily her best known. You haven't read it.
Oh, heavens to Betsy, no, I haven't. No, I scare too easily.
Oh, yes, that's right. Well, there's a not very good movie, if you prefer.
No. No, that would be much, much worse. I'd likely run down to the road screaming. And who'd look after Miss Blum?
The man looks down.
That particular novel was most notable for Miss Blum's deliberate choice to leave off the presumably horrific ending. Now, she always insisted it wasn't a choice at all, but rather an obligation. An obligation to be true to the subject. To Polly.
Lily shakes her head.
I don't understand.
Well, I don't want to give it away.
But Mr. Waxcap, I'll never read it.
I'd hate to keep you.
He snaps his briefcase shut and leaves. Lily sits alone, breath quickening. She looks at the business card. It reads, J.R.L. Darling and Sons. Lily stares ahead. Now, the outside of the house. Then inside, Iris in a chair stares into space.
The house was built in 1812 by the two bare hands of a local man. As a gift to his new bride, the couple was last seen taking their marriage vows in the center of town.
Lily peruses the bookshelf.
And the very next day, they were gone, disappearing before placing a single piece of furniture. The townspeople shook their heads and clucked their tongues.
She pulls a book from the shelf.
Some people, they'd say, just get spooked.
The cover reads, The Lady in the Walls.
Well, well. You're not so big and tough.
Lily cracks open the book. A white flower is pressed inside the front cover. Lily looks over her shoulder, then returns to the book. She takes a breath, then flips to the first chapter. She swallows and begins reading. In profile, a young blonde woman in a high-necked dress and hat stands by the stairs, eyes closed and motionless.
The pretty thing you are looking at now is me. My name is Polly Parsons, and I came into the world just as I left it. I am not more than a few minutes old, and my mother is already dead. Her forehead slick with sweat, and cool with the pallor of icebox butter.
She opens her eyes.
I am tied to my mother's body by a terrible rope. It is a shiny, twisted, midnight blue-black. The doctor is holding me up to the light.
Polly looks up.
But now I am dead. And yes, I left the world just as I came into it.
She turns her head over her left shoulder to face front.
I'm wearing nothing but blood.
Blackness. Lily stares at the book. She shuts her eyes and closes the cover. She flips the novel over, revealing a black and white photo of Iris as a young woman. She wears dark-rimmed glasses and a necklace made of turquoise. Lily takes in the cover. She slowly runs her index finger over the necklace in the photo. Then she drags her finger up to Iris's glasses. She finds a small mark on the pad of her finger. She rubs the mark with her thumb. It doesn't come off. Lily stands over a sink, rinsing a colander full of blackberries. She turns off the faucet and goes to place the colander on the counter. The colander slips from the counter. Lily looks down. Berries are scattered over the kitchen floor, and there is a dark blotch on her white tennis shoe.
Nuts.
She puts the colander in the sink and notices a bruise on her right arm. Blinking, she examines it. Her lips are parted. She takes a step back, transfixed. Dark spots appear across her forearm. Lily stares. Her arms and fingers swell up. Tumorous lumps grow on her arms, stretching her skin. Lily's eyes widen and she trembles. She clenches her hands into fists. She turns toward the voice. She looks back at her arms. They're normal. She looks them over, then scans the kitchen. She touches her forearms, her eyebrows furrowed. Darkness.
I am as white as a sail.
A brown-haired woman in a white cardigan slowly takes shape, pulling something long and white in her mouth.
I tell this often to myself. I tell myself that nothing gets on me. But it does me little good. The words pour right through. I am too full of holes.
She chews on the rope-like white object and fades. A gable of the house at night. Lily, wearing glasses, sits in bed. She clutches the book, staring at the cover.
Grow up, you dumb old scaredy cat. It's just a bunch of silly old make-believe type of rotten paper.
She opens the cover and flips through the pages. Blackness. The back of a woman seated at a desk with a typewriter.
Dear reader,
she exhales wisps of smoke.
You should know that the true account that follows in this book was told to me directly by Polly Parsons. The young woman who lived it, but alas, did not survive it. True to our heroine, my heroine, I have written down all that she cared to reveal, all but the very ending, which she was either unable or unwilling to tell me herself.
She turns her head to the right. A cigarette dangles from her lips. An ash falls from its tip as she reaches it toward an ashtray.
Or maybe she just couldn't see it anymore.
She stares into the distance. Next, Polly hobbles into the foyer, blindfolded by a black ribbon. She smiles, then takes two unsteady steps. She stops and listens. She turns her head and laughs to herself. Polly feels her way through the house, her hands running across the walls.
And even if I was fiendishly tempted, I refrained from pressing the subject with her. though it seems safe to assume that as endings go, Polly's was not an especially pretty one.
Polly feels her way to a window. Sunlight lights her face. She looks down, then continues walking. Behind her, a man walks in.
But Polly wouldn't tell me herself, and I couldn't have gone and simply made something up. So I have left it off altogether. Out of respect for the dead, you understand.
Polly looks over her shoulder. The man remains still.
Because yes, dear reader, Polly Parsons, the subject of this book, is quite dead indeed.
Polly heads toward the kitchen, stopping in the doorframe.
Quite dead, but not quite buried.
She slowly walks in, her arms stretched in front of her.
Carelessly concealed in a grave too shallow to be rightly called a grave at all.
Her boots take uncertain steps across the wide planked floor.
Better to call it a hiding place.
She stops. Polly turns her head to face the doorway.
But I've said too much already. And now we'll leave the rest to Polly herself, as was my intention in the first place.
With small steps, she continues forward.
Iris Blum, Braintree, Massachusetts, 1960.
The man, through the doorway, walks off in the same direction as Polly. Lily, in bed, reading the book, she closes it.
Oh, you silly baby.
She tosses the book down.
Oh, you silly baby.
Lily removes her glasses and bites her nails. She looks up from her hands, her eyes dart, and her lips part. Her gaze slowly shifts from right to left, and she turns her head to look toward her left. She whips her head to the right, eyes wide. She sits up straight, looking toward the hall. The front porch of the house at night. Lily, wearing glasses, holds back a curtain and stares out a window. Rain streaks down her reflection.
The walls and windows are as thin as bones. A person could walk right through them. Just up and leave this old house.
Lily lets go of the curtain. She turns and walks past a darkened wall into the dining area. Lily pauses just inside the door and puts her hands in the pockets of her cardigan. She stands. Then she walks to her left. The lady in the walls sits on top of the old TV set. Lily kneels in front of the screen, her hands hold on to the sides. She presses a button. Static appears on the TV. She switches the dial. Another station of static. She switches the dial. More static. Static again. She switches the dial.
Stop.
Polly's reflection on the screen. Lily swings her head around, staring at an open, darkened doorway. She slowly removes her glasses. The gaping, dark doorway looms. Lily turns back to the TV. The light from the static flickers over her face. She switches off the television. She examines her reflection on the blank screen.
This is how you rot.
Lily shifts her weight back away from the television. Her eyes dart around. Lily's head obscures the television screen. Now the cassette cogs turn. Lily stands at Miss Blum's bedside. She places her hand gently on the bed. Lily pats it with her fingertips and approaches the foot of the bed. She stops and stares toward the other side of the room. Lily brings her hand to her face and slowly takes off her glasses. The open door leads to the pitch-black hallway. Lily stares. She swallows. On the other side of the threshold, complete darkness fills the hall. The woman in the white dress slowly appears. Her misty figure walks backward through the dark. She turns slowly. The darkness fades over her. Day. Light fills the kitchen and foyer of the house. The corner of the rug is curled over. Lily reaches the bottom of the stairs and kicks it over. She walks toward the kitchen. She stops in front of the kitchen entrance and stares at the wall. Lily walks into the kitchen. Tape holds a business card to the wall by the phone. It reads JRL Darling and Sons.
It's safe, though. I mean, nothing is gonna fall down.
Lily looks to the ceiling, then out from the kitchen. The mold spreads from a crease in the wall.
And when do you think you can come to do that? To open it up, to... open up the wall, I mean. Yeah, Monday's okay. Well, any day is okay. I'm not going anywhere.
Lightning flashes. Lily looks up to the ceiling.
Oh, well, I haven't really looked. I kind of hate the sight of it. But okay. I can. I will.
She closes her eyes and takes a deep breath.
Okay. Thanks.
Lily stares out toward the mold. She lowers the phone. Lily turns and takes a step back from the doorway. She clutches the phone to her chest. Lily places the phone back on the base. She stands facing the wall. Lily tilts her head back. Later, Lily stands in the laundry room. She leans forward and looks behind the dryer. Lily stands up straight and scans the room. She walks out onto the second floor hallway. Lily places her hand on the wall between the laundry room and another closed door. She turns to the door. Lily lowers her hand. She takes a step forward and reaches for the door handle. Lily opens the door slightly and peeks inside. She opens the door fully and stares. Lily steps inside of the closet. She looks up. Boxes fill the shelves above her. Lily looks around the closet. She pulls herself up on a shelf and cranes her neck up for a better view. Lily scans the shelf. She pulls down a white box. Then she reaches for another box and starts to slide it. Lily stops. She stares up at the shelf. Lily lowers her gaze. She looks back up. A name on the side of the box reads, Polly. Lily grabs the box and slides it down from the shelf. She stares at the name. Lily carries the box out of the closet. She sets it on her bed. Mold stains the corner of the box. Lily stands over the box. She rubs her hand on the top. Lily's chest heaves. She swallows. Lily picks up a pair of scissors and brings the blade to the taped center of the box. She holds the box with her other hand for support. Lily drags the scissors between the taped flaps. Her mouth opens as she pulls. Lily sets down the scissors. She reaches toward the box. Lily gently places her fingers on the inside of the flap. She opens the box. Mold covers smaller boxes inside. Lily's mouth hangs open. She stares into the box. A light blue box covered in mold sits on top. Lily holds her hands over the box. She lifts the lid. Lily moves the lid off the box. Her mouth agape, she stares inside. Handwritten pages fill the box. Mold marks the paper. Lily reaches toward the pages. She touches the corner of the sheet and peels it away from the stack. Mold stains the sheet beneath it. Lily smiles faintly. She opens her mouth as she gazes inside. Now, young Miss Blum sits at her desk and stares out of the window.
I now believe Polly entirely when she insists that she does not remember what happened to her in the end. I can sometimes see her struggle with the shape of it.
She drinks from a mug.
More as if trying to remember a song she once heard, and not as she might remember an event. How does one forget something as essential as that?
She looks down into her mug and breathes deeply.
How does one forget a death?
She turns her head and looks up at the window. Now, Polly's black boots on the wide planked floor. The hem of her white dress reaches her ankles. Polly's feet move forward. Through the doorway, the man moves in the same direction.
Maybe it is the body that remembers.
A man with mutton chop whiskers.
And without the body, there is nothing to hold to.
Young Miss Blum sits in the chair and stares ahead.
We make our own ghosts by looking, but pretending not to see.
Polly, blindfolded, runs her hand along a piece of wood that rests against the wall outside of the kitchen. She pulls her hand away, her index finger bleeds. She holds her hand in front of her face. Then, she removes her blindfold and pulls it under her chin.
And then forgetting ourselves altogether. It is a terrible thing to look at oneself and to all the while see nothing.
Polly stares into an empty crawl space. She turns to the man with mutton chops, her eyes wide.
Surely this is how we make our own ghosts.
He swallows, then his expression settles.
We make them out of ourselves.
She turns to the crawl space, trembling. The man with mutton chops comes at Polly, a hammer raised over his head. The young Miss Blum's head faces forward. She blinks. Present-day Miss Blum sits in a wing chair, looking off. Her eyes shift forward. She turns her head to face forward. The man with mutton chops hammers planks over the crawl space. Blood stains the walls and his hands. He holds nails in his mouth as he hammers away. A nail falls. Lily looks over her shoulder. She turns back to the box. She closes the box of letters. Lily furrows her brow and closes the large box. She blinks, her hands resting on top of the closed box. She turns, leaves the room, and walks across the hall to the adjacent room. The box remains on the bed. Outside, rain pours over the house. In the bathroom, Miss Blum sits on a chair.
I took one of your books off the shelf in your study.
Lily brushes her hair.
I hope that's all right.
Lily steps behind Miss Blum and continues to brush.
The lady in the walls? Had to put it down, though. Too scary for me.
Miss Blum's eyes shift. A tuft of Miss Blum's hair sticks up. Lily brushes it gently.
You know that one, don't you?
Where did you go, Polly?
I didn't go anywhere, Miss Blum. I'm here with you. Same as I have always been. The same Lily Sater of 43 Hoover Road, Altoona.
Lily blinks and closes her eyes.
Pennsylvania.
She smiles with her lips closed.
At your service.
Miss Blum stares with wide eyes. Lily closes her eyes and licks her lips. She brushes Miss Blum's hair. Miss Blum frowns.
You had so much to say in those first years.
Lily stops brushing and steps back.
When you lived here with me.
Lily lifts her gaze.
Enough to fill a book.
Miss Blum tightens and raises her bottom lip, accentuating her frown.
And then? Nothing.
Her mouth slack, Miss Blum stares ahead. She knits her brow.
You turned your back.
Lily stands next to her, looking down at her.
You turned your back. And you turned your back so many times that soon your feet were facing the wrong way altogether.
She straightens in her chair.
But I had to watch you come into a room. Back to front. I did nothing but sit and listen. I made no noises. I welcome to no visitors. And here, now you've come back. But only to hurt me, only to show yourself, but no. Not to let me see.
Lily crouches in front of Miss Blum.
You hardly resemble yourself.
Miss Blum, please.
Miss Blum shakes her head.
You poor, pretty things, whose prettiness holds only one guarantee. Learn to see yourself as the rest of the world does, and you'll keep.
Lily stares up at Miss Blum. Her eyes twitch.
But left alone. With only your own eyes looking back at you. And even the prettiest things are rot.
Miss Blum's chin dips and she lifts her brow. Tears well in Lily's eyes.
You fall apart like flowers.
Tears fall from the corner of Lily's eyes. Blackness. Next, lights shine from an upstairs bedroom in the house. Reels in a video cassette turn. Miss Blum sits up in bed. On the television, a man aims a rifle. Another man falls from a horse. The shooter reloads. Lily lies on the bed and chews a drawstring from her hooded sweatshirt. The shooter reloads his rifle. In another room, a piano rests along a wall. In the dim foyer. Light shines through the windows next to the front door. The front door becomes a black rectangle. Polly appears from the darkness. In profile, she walks forward slowly. Miss Blum sleeps sitting up in bed. Polly continues walking. Miss Blum sits with her eyes closed tight. Polly walks next to her. She stands by the bed. Polly raises her pale hand to her mouth and whispers in Miss Blum's ear. Polly turns. Her cloudy pupils stare ahead. Static fills the TV screen. Lily lies awake in bed. She lifts her head slightly. A hazy view of Lily's room from the hall. Lily lifts her shirt over her head. Wearing only a bra and skirt, she holds her shirt and steps near the bed.
The pretty thing you are looking at is me.
Lily crosses her arms and holds her elbows.
But it is me that still cannot see any of what is coming.
Now Lily stands at the bathroom's entrance.
Me that doesn't even know where to look.
She raises her hand inside of the door frame. The bathroom light goes out.
Me that can see only the drawer that opens.
The foyer desk drawer.
And the claw that closes.
Darkness covers the front door.
The bell that rings. And the spots that spread.
Spots of mold stain the wall.
The holes that pour through.
Water pours over berries.
And the cord that stretches.
The phone cord on the floor.
The hammer and the pliers.
The business card.
And the terrible book.
Books on a shelf.
And the face of the woman who wrote it all down.
Miss Blum looks forward.
The me that can see only the name. Only her name.
a chapter starts with Polly Parsons.
But the rest of what is coming cannot be seen.
Polly stands in the foyer.
Even as I look right at it.
Now, Lily sits on her bed, facing the window.
It is a terrible thing to look at oneself, and all the while, see nothing.
Lily slowly turns her head. She looks over her shoulder, eyes fixed on Miss Blum's room. Blinking, she looks down. The dimly lit upstairs hall. Lily walks into the hallway and then to Miss Blum's bedroom. She pauses in the doorway. She slowly walks to the nightstand and stands over the tape player, her hands clasped at her waist. The base of the lamp on the nightstand is decorated with a picture of a horse trotting by a farmhouse. She presses a button. Lily looks up and toward the hall. She inches to the staircase. She places her hand over the banister and leans forward. Running her hand along the railing, she advances to the top of the stairs. She stops at the steps, swallows, and places her hand on the wall. The downstairs light switches on.
Hello?
Lily pulls the top of her cardigan together. She hesitates at the top of the stairs. The foyer is illuminated by the overhead light. Lily haltingly creeps down the stairs. At the bottom of the steps, Lily pauses, her head tilted slightly. Then she slowly turns toward the kitchen. From the foyer, Lily sees the mold-covered wall, now opened up with boards stacked on the wall beside it. Clutching her sweater, she walks toward it. She steps closer to it, leans in, and sees shimmering, scaly black matter inside the crawl space. She stops. Her jaw drops. She puts her hand to her mouth. Lily startles, then freezes. She takes her hand from her mouth and moves past the crawl space to the kitchen threshold. Lily glances inside, then carefully steps through the doorway and into the room. Through the opening to the kitchen, she looks to her right and walks away toward the dining room. The translucent figure of Polly emerges in the kitchen from the left of the door frame and walks backwards, following Lily. Lily walks through the first floor from the kitchen to the dining area and then peers through the doorway to the parlor. She inches her way through the dark parlor and back to the foyer. Back in the entryway, her hands grip the top of her sweater. She trembles and blinks quickly. Her eyes dart around the room. She spins around. She scans the darkness of the parlor behind her. She slowly turns back to the entryway. A reflection of Polly on Lily's pupils. Lily backs into a corner and thrashes her hand at the wall. Lily silently screams. She struggles and gasps for air. Lily's eyes roll back as her last breaths leave her body. Her body goes limp. Polly watches her, then turns away. Blackness. Bright sunlight illuminates the kitchen, the foyer, the staircase.
I had arrived in the first few days of August, hired to care for Ms. Blum.
At the bottom of the steps, the corner of the rug curls over.
The winter of that year proved to be unseasonably warm.
A used plate sits on the dining room table.
And by February, all that was left of the snow on the sides of the highways had turned mostly black. It rained too much in the spring, and the fruit and the trees hung heavy at the ends of bent branches. The sun in the summer months was unreasonably hot and stung my bare shoulders whenever I let it.
The clock on the wall reads 2:55.
I remember thinking that it felt like fall would never come. And then it never did.
The dark mold covers a larger area on the wall. In the foyer, Lily's body lies face down, blocking the door. Her feet rest on the rug. Outside, a van is parked in front of the house. A man in coveralls stands at the front door. Lily, in a button-up white shirt and cardigan, stands at the top of the stairs. She proceeds down the steps. She stops and looks toward the bottom of the staircase. She tilts her head slightly. Her eyes flick to the door. The man peers through the drawn curtains of the window next to the door. Lily hesitates, then walks down the remainder of the stairs. She stops in front of the window by the door. Speckles of light reflect on her clothing. Outside, the man steps away from the window. Lily stands, frozen. Outside, the man walks down the steps. He looks at the top story of the house, then heads to the van. He opens the door and gets into the driver's seat. Inside, Lily, out of focus, looks away from the window over her right shoulder. She turns and steps forward. She stops and stares, the motes of light still dancing on her sweater and skirt. She turns and walks to the darkened parlor. She stands at the doorway and surveys the room. Lily looks up and toward the stairs. She turns and heads to the bottom of the stairs. Next, Lily peers around the doorframe of Miss Blum's bedroom. Lily breathes heavily, eyes wide. Inside the room, Miss Blum's body is collapsed on the floor, arms splayed. Lily edges closer. The bell is tipped on its side next to the mold-spotted sole of Miss Blum's foot. Lily swivels her head. In the study, a young Iris sits at the desk. She works on the typewriter, a cigarette in her lips. Lily approaches and watches from the doorway. Iris's head tilts up. She turns, tapping the cigarette into an ashtray. She looks over her shoulder toward the door. Iris slides the chair back and stands. She walks to the doorway and stops. Lily watches her. Iris stares straight ahead.
Polly?
She stands and waits with a faint smile. She walks out of the room. Lily watches her go. She blinks, then looks down. Outside the house, evening brightens into day. Day fades into night. Night morphs into day. Mr. Waxcap's car pulls up to the house. He exits the driver's seat and quickly heads to the porch. He ascends the stairs and opens the storm door. He uses a key to open the inner door. He puts one foot on the threshold, pauses, and backs out of the door. He turns from the house, descends the porch steps, and goes around the right side of the house. Later, paramedics load two gurneys into the back of a parked ambulance. A man in a tie presents a clipboard to Mr. Waxcap. He removes a pen from his jacket and signs it. Later, Mr. Waxcap locks the front door of the house. He looks at the key in his hand. The key ring is labeled Master. Mr. Waxcap descends the stairs of the porch and heads to his car. Later, the day turns to night. Blackness. At night, an SUV and a full-size car are parked in front of the house. Inside, a beam of light moves over the piano, which is draped with a dust cloth.
I have heard myself say that a house with a death in it can never again be bought or sold by the living. It can only be borrowed from its ghosts.
The beam of light moves through the dark room. It illuminates a chair and moves to a bed. A boy sleeps under the covers. The light moves to another bed where a girl sleeps. She turns over.
And so it is.
The beam lands on a globe and a wooden chair draped with clothing.
House that stands at the end of Teacup Road, near the town of Braintree, Massachusetts.
The light shines on the banister of the stairs and then the front door.
You may borrow it from me.
The little girl gets out of bed and walks into the darkened upstairs hallway. She carries a stuffed toy. She turns and heads into the bathroom, switches on the light, and stands on a step stool in front of the sink. She picks up a glass and fills it. The mirror reflects her face as she sips.
Because the memory of a death is a thing that stays, pressed deeply in place like type on paper.
The boy tosses in bed. He sits up.
Even after it has been covered up with nothing left to see.
The boy stares off.
And still, I think I'll stay for one more look at her.
The barely visible figure of Polly floats backward across the doorframe in the hall. A pale circle of light illuminates the front door in the foyer.
This is how I let myself rot.
In profile, Lily's shadowy visage appears. She gnaws on a long, white, rope-like object.
The pretty thing you're looking at is me.
Lily's face morphs to face forward, then fades. Directed by Osgood Perkins. Produced by Rob Paris. Produced by Robert Menzies. Executive producer, Alphonse Goussain. Executive producers, Matt Levin, Ian Brick. Associate producers, Sarah Deline, W. Michael Beard. Music by Elvis Perkins. Director of Photography, Julie Kirkwood. Production designers, Gemma Mireed, Shane Boucher. Edited by Brian Ufberg. Costume designer, Jennifer Stroud. Casting by Edie Belasco, CSA. Casting by Ilona Smith, CSA, CDC. Ruth Wilson. Bob Balaban. Lucy Boynton. And Paul Apprentice. Netflix presents a Netflix original film, a Zed Filmworks and Go Insane Films production, a Paris Film Incorporated production. Rolling credits. Zed Filmworks. This film was produced with the participation of the Canadian Film or Video Production Tax Credit, Ontario Media Development Corporation Film and Television Tax Credit. The producers wish to thank City of Ottawa, Invest Ottawa, the Town of Morrisburg, Upper Canada Village, Louise Tarleton, Rhonda Weinberg, the McIntosh Inn, Morrisburg, Howard Fine Jewelers, Timepiece Supplier, Cartier Place Suite Hotel, The Minto 185, Logos, ACTRA, SAG-AFTRA One Union, International Cinematographers Guild, Directors Guild of Canada, Ontario. The characters and events depicted in this motion picture are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons living or dead is purely coincidental and not intended. No animals were harmed in the production of this motion picture. This motion picture is protected under the laws of Canada, the United States of America, and other countries. Copyright 2016. I Am the Pretty Thing Productions, Inc. All rights reserved. This motion picture, or any part thereof, including without limitation the soundtrack, may not be used, reproduced, published, exhibited, or distributed in any form or media or by any means without the prior written permission of the copyright holder. I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House. Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix.